Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. It's budget time in Charlotte. The city's working on the next fiscal year's budget, and the good news is they're not contemplating another increase in property taxes, but they're looking at raising some fees. We talk about that, the impact of declining sales tax revenues, or steady but not increasing sales tax revenues, the goals the city has that need funding, and about what progress is or is not being made on our transit plan in Raleigh. And to take us through all of that and more, we welcome back Charlotte Mayor Vial Lyles. And because there's so many numbers involved in all of this, we brought the numbers guy in, and he is City Manager Marcus Jones. Welcome back to both of you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you for the listeners that you have today to hear a little bit more about what goes on in our City Hall.
Actually, Marcus Jones was with us exactly 1 year ago today.
Wow.
And it was 6 months ago that you were with us, Mayor. Is it something I said?
Oh, no, you've got so many people. I think you have so many people in this community that are doing this work that I have to listen to you when you have the council members on from Charlotte or Davison, or I mean, we really have become a region, and the regional ideas and conversations are really best done by Mike Collins.
Okay, I'll take that, but not with I'll take it with a grain of salt. Okay, so before we get to the budget, I have to talk about something that's in the news right now. The City Council voted in closed session Monday night to preemptively settle a potential lawsuit by CMPD Chief Johnny Jennings, who was upset over threatening text messages that he received last year from former Charlotte City Council member Tariq Bakari. In one of those texts, Bakari said he would try and get Jennings fired and work to, quote, cripple his legacy. They were fighting at the time, I believe, over protective vests for officers. Bakari supported that. I believe Jennings felt that that was not necessarily necessary. And he felt that the texts, once revealed, because it was reported on by both The Observer and WFAE, damaged his reputation and might hurt his chances for future employment. So the council met on Monday. What did they decide to do?
Well, one, whatever they decided to do, I'm not going to be able to disclose personal to this public. And there's a reason for this. It is, one, to both protect the opportunities that the chief has for him to be a part of this organization and to do the job that he has to do, as well as we have to protect our own council members and follow the law. Human resource items in closed session are not appropriate for me to talk about. I think we've had this conversation once before, and it's just one of those things, and I can't remember who followed up on it, but honestly, there is no way for a council member to talk about what happens in a closed session meeting. That's why it's called closed session.
So you can't even discuss the fact that the council decided to reach a settlement with the police chief, Johnny Jennings?
I cannot talk about anything that goes on in that meeting.
So reports that have come out say that he's receiving a settlement of about $100,000, and that's taxpayer money. You can't confirm or deny that?
I cannot confirm or deny that.
When can that be confirmed or denied?
You know, I think that I'd have to have our attorney let you know that. I mean, if there's an answer to that question, we'll get it to you.
Because I'm also curious about why the council would settle on a suit that had yet to go to court. Why not let it go to court?
I can't answer that question, Mike. I mean, we can go through this, and I will have to say this over and over again. I cannot discuss or comment anything that happened during a closed session. It would violate the code of ethics that the city council has.
And why wasn't this a private matter between Mr. Jennings and Mr. Bakari? Why would he sue the city?
I can't make any comments on that, Mike. I cannot do this. It would violate the code of ethics. That's as much as I can say. Thank you.
Okay, I have to ask the questions.
I know, and
I
I
have
have
to
to
ask
say,
them.
do what I have to do. I think that it's just that's the way the world works sometimes.
Okay, well, let's move on to some good news, and that is the fact that the proposed budget, as it stands, contains no property tax increase despite some challenges. Marcus Jones, you're the guy responsible for that, so how did you manage it?
Well, thanks and good morning, Mike. As you mentioned, there's no property tax increase. It's in this budget, and we have some core principles. It's, preserve core services and maintain our reserves. Maybe the most important thing is instead of trying to address a sales tax decline, which was significant, by trying to bring in more revenue or increasing taxes, we went on to the expenditure side. We were able to eliminate about $7.5 million of expenditures.
This budget comes in at, I think, about $3.6 billion as proposed. How does that compare to other recent budgets?
Yeah, Mike, it's a decline of last year's budget, which was close to 4.2 billion. The difference is basically this is not a bond year. So if you will recall, well, next year's not a bond year. This year was a $400 million bond. And also with aviation, the way that they've structured some of their debt pushed out some of the bonds associated with aviation. So it's really from a general fund standpoint, when we talk about the general fund, it's really property tax, sales tax, fees. The budget actually increased by 5.2%, but the overall budget, when you bring in the enterprise funds and you bring in the general fund and the CIP, actually declined.
So you cut some expenses, but the costs are rising. Some revenues, like those generated from sales taxes, are flat or falling. Is the writing on the wall for another property tax increase next year?
Oh gosh, this is real early. I'd like to finish this budget first, Mike. But so Mike, here's the issue, and I'll try to do it succinctly. We've always said we need another revenue source. We believe the 1 cent sales tax would be helpful, even though it's just for transportation or mobility. It takes some pressure off of the general fund. So if that comes in, then the likelihood of a property tax increase goes down. If that doesn't come in, we need more revenue to continue the services that we deliver today.
Mayor, Charlotte raised property taxes for the first time in 6 years. I think it was last year. Mecklenburg County also raised property taxes last year. And although they want to hold the line this year, and they're meeting on their budget, I think, on May 15th, there are rumors circulating that they may feel the need to raise property taxes in Mecklenburg County. Do you have any inside information about what the county manager or county commission are considering in that area?
Like you're asking me to do things that are magical with a wand or something. No, I do not know what the county will do. I think that one of the things that I really appreciate about this work that we're doing, we tend to work together, but in budget times, they have their responsibilities and we have ours. And so I don't know what they are going to plan to do, but I expect that they are aware of the environment that we have, just like we have been.
Marcus Jones, your proposed budget calls for all city employees to get at least a 3% pay raise, with hourly employees getting a 4% raise, if that's correct. Where will that take hourly employee compensation and the average compensation for city workers?
Yep. So, Mike, what we also have in this budget is in the upcoming fiscal year that no employee would make less than $24 an hour. So that's essentially $80 short of 50,000, so about $50,000 a year. I will say I break it into two categories. One, public safety. Public safety, unless you're really topped out, on average, you'll get about a 6.5% increase. That's police and fire. And for those who are topped out, a combination of a cost of living increase and a bonus would get them to 3%. And I think what's really important with public safety, which really drives this budget, is that over the last 5 years, the lowest pay and also the top pay in both police and fire have increased by about 30%. Last thing I think is extremely important is, according to CMPD, we may fill all of the vacant police positions, by spring of next year, which is really big for a large city like ours.
How are they accomplishing that? Because I know that police recruitment and retainment has been a challenge, as has bus driver recruitment and retainment at the schools, et cetera. That's been a difficult challenge. How are they accomplishing that?
Yeah. So, Mike, it's more than just the salary. So what we've tried to do is have other incentives, like 2.5% for what we call shift differential, the second shift to third shift. Additional funds if you have a commercial driver's license, which is related to your job, and even prepaid college tuition. There's a lot of things that we're trying to do over and above that, even take home cars for police officers. So I think we've listened, and we've had a pretty good track record with trying to stick with the public safety pay plan, and it's starting to pay off.
When you raise salaries, the costs to the city for benefits also rises, it seems to me. What's your biggest line item? What's the biggest expense the city faces every year?
Sure, Mike, it's definitely salaries. But I want to talk about just our compensation too. So when we talk about compensation, it's not just salaries, it's healthcare, and it's also retirement. Mm-hmm. And so we had about a $33 million increase in expenditures. And just to what I say, keep the lights on, our leases, our contracts, our costs with healthcare and retirement. And just healthcare and retirement costs us about, $12 million more. So those are the challenges we have as a city. And you know, in North Carolina, how we have to reset property revals to a revenue neutral position. So as all this inflation is hitting us, when the reval comes in 2028 by law, we have to post a rate that is revenue neutral.
Hmm. Mayor, it requires revenue, obviously, to provide services. You can't pick up the trash if you have no money to do it. And although the city is holding the line this year on property taxes, or at least that's what the budget proposes to do, the budget also proposes to raise fees for water and sewer and waste services. So isn't that really just another way of saying we're raising taxes?
For me, it doesn't say we're just raising taxes. What we're doing is, if you have something that is fee-based, it's because everybody doesn't have to pay for it. You're paying for a specific service. And so that's the way that I look at this. It's, yes, it is government money, but it's also governmental operations that are being included for it. So if you want to have something, a rezoning, it takes a lot of staff to do that. And so there's a cost to it, but nobody pays that cost except the people that benefit from it.
And Marcus, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like water, sewer, and trash always go up. Every year they increase the fees. And if that's the case, I'm just curious as to why. Is it simply because everything costs more and therefore it costs them more to operate?
Well, that's true. That's part of it, Mike. The other part of it is their enterprise funds. And so they're fee-based. And let's stick with water and stormwater, for example. They're regional in nature. They are AAA bond rated. And so we need to make sure we're keeping up with the infrastructure. We don't want to be a place that is not having the appropriate amount of revenue to produce systems that are regional in nature.
How much more will people be paying on average for water, sewer, trash?
Yes, $7.50 a month, all in.
All in. Okay, so that's what? What's 7 times 12? 80-something dollars a year.
$106 a year.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for doing the math. That's why you're here. Marcus Jones is the city manager. Mayor Via Lyles is also with us. When we come back, we'll talk about infrastructure, because the city needs infrastructure, and we need the money for the infrastructure. And there are several places where that money could come from, among them the transit tax, if we ever get it. We'll talk about that when we come back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte. Using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking today with Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles and Charlotte City Manager Marcus Jones about a bunch of stuff, including the budget, which is going to be discussed by City Council before they pass it later on this month. One source of revenue for every city is the sales tax. We have a sales tax here. as I understand it, sales tax revenues have been relatively flat. We have had, up until recently, a booming economy. I'm curious as to why you think revenues have been flat, Marcus.
Well, Mike, you're right. Three of the last 4 years, we've had double-digit growth in sales tax, but we never budget, you know, a 16% increase. We try to go with what's the average, and that's about 4.5%. Right now, we're tracking towards, as you said, essentially flat, you know, not 2%, but 0.2. It's some of this is the economy and some of the uncertainty that we're seeing in purchases. So we're going to be cautious with our projections on sales tax. And as I mentioned earlier, it's about a $6.5 million hit to our budget.
If in a, we had, by all measures and all economists were saying, up until January, February, we had the an economy that was the envy of the world. It was a booming economy, although prices were high. Higher prices mean more sales taxes attached to those higher prices. How concerned are you about what tariffs, Donald Trump's tariffs, might do? Because even though they will raise prices, some say that some of these prices will be cost prohibitive for people to buy. Are you anticipating lower sales tax revenues as a result?
So as we go into, again, the upcoming fiscal year, absolutely, we are bringing down our estimate for sales tax. Mike, what's difficult with trying to estimate that, and I have a lot of concern for any economist that's trying to figure this out, is, you know, sometimes it's on, sometimes it's off. So we are just monitoring it and being conservative in our estimates.
Aside from sales tax revenues maybe being impacted by higher prices caused by tariffs, how about the purchases that the city has to make as a result of higher prices caused by tariffs? How do you budget for that? How many items do you anticipate might be more expensive, even remarkably more expensive, if these tariffs stand?
Yeah, Mike, I would say that right now on the operating side, again, we're being conservative with our estimates. What I'm really concerned about is our capital budget. So we build stuff with that. And so what we do annually is give what we call the council a red, blue, yellow report with projects. And right now, the vast majority of the projects are on schedule, but we haven't seen the hit or the impact of tariffs. So I'm worried that this time next year, that many of those projects that are on schedule may be impacted.
So no property tax increase in the budget this year. You're hoping not to propose one next year. We'll have to see what happens either. But I believe you say part of that, whether or not you do that next year, is contingent upon whether or not we get this 1 cent sales tax for transit, because we need infrastructure. But tell me why that, the passage or not of that, is something that will help you decide whether you need a property tax increase. Explain that to me.
So I would start by saying that I would call it a transportation tax, because what was approved by 97%. Of the different governing bodies in Mecklenburg County was a 40-20-40 split. 40% going to transit, 20% going to the bus system, but another 40% coming directly to the city of Charlotte in the six towns. And that those dollars come into our general fund budget, and they allow us to move those funds into whether it's our capital budget or our pay-go for transportation. And that alleviates some of the stress that we use for property tax on our CIP and our PAYGO. So that's kind of the math behind it. Mm-hmm. For the city, it's $102 million the first year, and over a 30-year period is $5.7 billion. That is significant to address our infrastructure needs.
Let's talk about that, because the money will go to our infrastructure needs. What are they? What do we need?
So I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
We worked on this for so long. If you go back to our strategic mobility plan, there's over 2,000 projects, and we're talking about sidewalks. We're talking about lighting, Vision Zero. That's the infrastructure that we're talking about. I know it says roads, but it's much more than that. So it would be projects that we would put off for decades that we're able to begin to address.
So this is, go ahead.
Can I just add, I think that when we talk about this, it's really something we think about it as transportation and transit, but really this is about upward mobility. It's about the CHETI study and how we can interpret what our community needs to do so that people can get to the places that we like, for them to be able to go to work, to be able to have a home. You know, we really believe that everybody in this community deserves a place to live and a good paying job and the ability to move back and forth. So when we're talking about this, it's not about just the concrete and the roads. It is about where can we provide opportunities for the people that live inside of our city, and how do we make sure that next generation is going to have the ability to invest. So if we start talking about, okay, we're going to do something in buses, well, how do we do something so that we can hire people to be bus drivers or to be the people that run the trains that are really, really cool kind of job? But I just think that we've got to stop thinking about it as just bricks and mortar and start thinking about it as people. You know, people that drive in our city, they sometimes have a cost of a car of over $1,000. If they can get on a bus for $2, then that's going to make a big difference in where they decide to have their own personal financial planning done. So let's try to remember that this is about our future, not just today, but for tomorrow.
So what I'm hearing you say is that when people go to the ballot box, if this 1 cent sales tax referendum is in fact on the ballot in November, they need to think of that as more than trains and buses and bricks and mortar. It's economic mobility and raising the level of the water for all the boats in the sea, essentially.
I'm going to hire you when we get the referendum going because you've expressed it exactly what we're trying to do. Okay. We get so many people coming into the city, and a lot of people talk about growth, but you know, I think that the adage is that if you're not growing, you're what, dying? Or you're not going to be the place that we want to be. And we want to have a great city. We want to have a city that people choose, not people that they just go to Myrtle Beach after they get through.
That means that this 1 cent sales tax referendum is important, particularly to you and planners and office holders and city officials. What happens if the 1 cent sales tax referendum does not make it on the ballot in November? What happens if it does make it on the ballot in November and voters say no? What happens? Does that mean we're going to have a property tax increase? First of all, does that mean we're going to have a property tax increase next year?
I'm not going to speak for everyone on the Charlotte City Council, but I assume that if we don't have this opportunity to do something significant about infrastructure, that we will have a declining infrastructure budget. We will not be able to cover this. This amount of money, it's 80% of what would be paid by our residents, and they deserve that. But I would say that when we look at this, we will have to do an entire recount of what's important to us. And that's going to narrow out so many things that we want to accomplish. So if it doesn't happen, we will all put our heads together and start a new way of dealing with it.
So then this is very important. I would think it's a top priority. So let's talk about this transit plan. We've been talking about it for a decade. The plan's been adjusted to reflect concerns of legislators in the General Assembly because the leadership didn't like our original plan and where the money went, so we changed things. And although the details are still somewhat in flux, it has been submitted to the General Assembly for consideration. They have to give us permission to put this referendum on the ballot. Back in February, Mecklenburg State Senator Vicky Sawyer, who is shepherding this through the General Assembly, said that getting these folks to say yes will be a tough sell. Has anything changed since February?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to Vicky Sawyer, who, you know, gives us real talk and makes it happen and tells us what is going on in Raleigh, as well as Tricia Cotham, who is also part of this initiative that we have. So when we are talking about what's next, I believe that we just have to put together the timing from the state to be able to address what will be possible for us to do. I'm not sure, Marcus, do you have anything to add about that?
I totally agree.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Finish your.
No, I totally agree. Just having the bill introduced in both chambers, I think a year ago, people would say not a chance. So there's an opportunity for the sales tax to move forward, and I think that's great.
Do we have a point person in Raleigh, Mayor? Is there somebody in these discussions with people in Raleigh from the city of Charlotte? Have we hired a lobbyist? Is there a city official? Is there an elected official that's dealing with this? Or is it just there languishing?
I would not say that it's there languishing. We certainly have a governmental affairs staff person in the city, mm-hmm. and that person stays in Raleigh often, but we also lean on other people. Remember, this is a regional approach. It is not just what Charlotte does. You know, you've got to talk about Huntersville, you've got to have Cornelius, you have to have all of the northern towns, and as well, some of the things that we are going to be doing in Pineville and in Simmons, neck of the woods, Mint Hill. So we don't see this as a singular effort on Charlotte. We see this as a combined effort of people that have come over the years to have a plan that we all agree upon. That's what is making the difference now.
So when Senator Sawyer was saying it's going to be a tough sell, she said something interesting. She said, quote, as you can imagine, it's not a popular thing to ask conservatives for the right to raise taxes for a county they don't represent. So let's unpack that. First of all, Charlotte is the economic engine of the state. Do you think they understand or appreciate that? And if not, why not?
I can't say if they appreciate that or not, but I think that they have had the opportunity to come and visit our city. We've actually had a number of initiatives where we've had the transportation people come and drive around in Charlotte and see what's going on. So we're not trying to convince them that Charlotte is anything special. We're really trying to convince them that there's an opportunity for Charlotte to be better. And I would say that across Wilmington, there are opportunities that this state, while a lot of it is very difficult, I think when you look at what we've been doing in North Carolina, it has been significant, and we're trying to keep up, and we want to do more people that are coming in. It's not just Charlotte.
Secondly, she said, they might be reluctant to raise taxes for a county they don't represent, which raises questions about why they should be involved in this decision at all. And in fact, it would be the voters who ultimately make the decision about whether or not this property tax, or this sales tax rather, will take place. Shouldn't the voters, the people who live here, be the ones who assess the value of this project and then say yes or no, as opposed to somebody who represents Chatham County?
Well, I tell you, I think that the answer is that yes, the voters will, because the county commission will have to put this on the ballot for the fall election. So the citizens and the voters will have an opportunity to make that decision.
If they're given that opportunity by people who don't represent Mecklenburg County, that's my point.
Yeah, I got your point.
Okay. City Council just lost at least one person that may have had an in, shall we say, with the General Assembly. Tariq Bakari, who's one of two Republicans on City Council, he's moved to Washington to be part of the Department of Transportation in the Trump administration. Do you think that he could continue to be of help, that he intends to be of help? He says he will, but have you talked with him? Has anybody talked with him about anything he might be able to do as the second person in command at the Department of Transportation to help Charlotte's efforts?
Well, when the last time that I spoke with him, as he was providing his, you know, change of work, he said that. And I trust that people, you know, I believe what people say. If they tell you that they're going to do something, I believe that they do.
Okay. Meanwhile, last week, the Metropolitan Transit Commission went head to head with the mayor of Matthews, John Higdon, who wanted them to consider a new funding split. Right now, the funding split, as I understand it, is 40% for trains, 40% for buses, 20% for stuff, or 40% for roads, 40% for transit, and then 20% for everything else. He was suggesting 45% to go toward trains. because that would increase Matthews' chances for getting the silver line, which appears doubtful under the current split. That followed Representative Tricia Cotham's proposal in the General Assembly to spend only 40% on roads, which and allowing jurisdictions to decide on how to spend the remaining 60% of the money collected from this sales tax. But all of the members of the Metropolitan Transit Commission, except for John Higdon, voted no. This was just a proposal to study this. You're a member of the MTC. Why did you vote no?
Well, actually, I'm the chair of the MTC, and okay. I didn't vote. So, but I
would
do
you have
a perspective. I have a perspective on okay. this, is that I think that we've been working on this effort for more than 3 or 4 years now. And it has taken a lot to unify how we're going to do this. And I believe that everyone that voted on it understood that we would have to step back and start all over again. And that was not, we have a sense of urgency to try to get this done. And I think that that's why the members of the MTC voted to actually say that we would not accept that opportunity, but there is always going to be something there, but we have to get something started. And that's what I think the vote reflected.
Well, Tricia Cotham's proposal is even more.
I did vote. Wait a minute. I did vote. Sorry. Okay. I can't remember sometimes how many votes there are, but I did vote to say no.
And you've just explained why you voted no. So Tricia Cotham's proposal, I think, is even more generous than the one that was proposed for study by John Higdon. Marcus, if Tricia Cotham gets her way in the General Assembly, that gives you 60% of the pot of gold to play with. What would that mean, and how would you spend it?
Well, I'd like to flip that a little bit, Mike. The other bill, the 60% with the bus and the rail, would go to the authority. So the authority would decide okay. how that is spent. The only decision for the localities would be around the 40% that's under the roads piece.
This project has been underway for quite a while. I want to talk about the speed with which it has moved toward Raleigh and what Raleigh is doing with it now. We'll talk about other things going on, like federal cuts and the impact they may have on Charlotte and the fact that the animal shelter has changed hands. We'll talk about that, too, and why when we come back at Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles is with us along with City Manager Marcus Jones, talking about all things city, mostly the budget, but other things as well. And we were talking about the transit plan before the break. This transit plan has been under discussion and changes ensuing, because that's the way things work, for a long time. But it seems to be moving at a glacial pace. In fact, the glaciers are melting faster than this plan is moving through its process. There doesn't seem to be a lot of urgency. Is that an incorrect perception, Mayor?
Like I wouldn't say that's an incorrect perception. What I would say is, as the mayor mentioned earlier, there are a number of people from the business community, from the towns, the city, the county, that are advocating that this occur. And it's a process. And in that process, from the very beginning, this was tied to the passing of the budget. So there's things that are going on in the process that I would continue to be a bit more optimistic maybe than you, that at least the wheels are turning.
Well, we don't know what the legislature will do. I don't know how involved they are in discussions about this. We don't hear anything out of Raleigh about them talking about this actively, at least. It's May. The November election is 6 months away. Is there enough time, Mayor Lyles, for the General Assembly to consider and vote on this? And if they say yes, is there time to get it on the ballot and campaign for voters to understand what it is and why they should say yes to it, or no, for that matter?
Well, I think a lot of our voters understand the issues that we have on congestion, and they understand that there is growth, but growth can also mean that we have to have infrastructure to provide people to move around. I think the idea of buses is absolutely one of the most significant things that we can do, because we need to have a better bus system. And if people can understand that, I think that we can get them prepared to make a decision. Like if you want to say, we want to have 15-minute intervals for bus transit, then we will have that out there. And I believe that people will understand the importance of it. As I said, it's not just about what we do and how we travel, but how do we create jobs and opportunities for other people?
So what happens if it doesn't make the ballot in November?
Well, you know, I try to be optimistic as well about it, but if this doesn't happen, we're going to have a lot more work to do, and it's going to be a lot more of what I would call, you know, you have to patch it together. It's like you're going to have to do something that's going to be different, and we have we know that, and so we'll just have to figure it out.
And what happens?
I just think that growth will not be as ready as what we think, and that we can have recruitment of new businesses, recruitment of people, or even just the ideas that we have for our own community so that people can move around the city well. Those are all things that would be at risk.
What happens if the General Assembly says no, or if they say yes and the voters say no?
Well, this is a Dillon state, and if the legislature says no, then we continue to figure out how to make it better no matter what we're doing.
Okay. Marcus Doge has been cutting federal agencies and federal programs wildly in Washington. Federal employees, however, don't just work inside the Beltway. They're all over the country. They pay local taxes. They pay sales taxes in those jurisdictions in which they live, including Charlotte. And federal dollars fund public and private projects all over the country. Have the effects of these cuts begun to be felt here?
Yes, so Mike, a couple of things. For us, the Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, is something that we rely on. So we're monitoring that. Also, as we start to think about some of the FEMA funds that come in as it relates to public safety and the way that they flow, we are monitoring that too. So we're in the phase of, because we really don't have a lot of, let's say, social services or mental health that's related to the city, like some other jurisdictions, but the CDBG and anything that's dealing with any types of FEMA funds give us a bit of concern.
Yeah, Mayor, last week, Roof Above, which serves about 1,200 homeless people every day through its programs, lost funding. They aren't the only nonprofit who's been impacted or is anticipating loss of funds. Several area arts groups, it was just announced, have lost funding because of these cuts. If these cuts spread to any great degree, particularly among nonprofits who are helping the least advantaged of us, can the city, can the county pick up the slack?
So I read the article about Roof Above, and it was disheartening, to say the least, about it. But what I know is that the city has a lot of work around infrastructure, and the county is builds infrastructure with people. And so, you know, the work that we do, we have to figure it out. We have to work together. Mark Durrell, who is the county chair, and the members of the county commission, I believe that they would be willing for all of us to put our elbows down on the table and figure out what's necessary.
And last week, Marcus, we spoke on this program to a couple of researchers at UNC Charlotte who lost funding a third of the way through their project from the NIH because it no longer met the political objectives of the Trump administration. And yesterday, as I mentioned, a couple of arts groups lost their funding from the National Endowment for the Arts because that's also been relatively politicized. When these cuts are felt going forward, is that what we're going to experience, death by a thousand cuts?
Well, I know that what we will experience is an impact on to the quality of life. This is a part of our ecosystem when we start to think about arts and culture. I think it's extremely important to point out that in this proposed budget, there's $11 million, the same $11 million in the current year for arts and culture organizations. So I believe the city is, I know the city is not pulling back from our investments in arts and culture. and we hope that that helps.
The city recently announced plans, really switching gears here now, they announced plans to move animal care and control out of the hands of CMPD and make it part of the city's general services department. You said, Marcus, this was part of the city's efforts to improve operational efficiencies. Explain that. How will that accomplish that, and why was it necessary, and does it matter to the average person who runs the animal shelter?
Well, I want to start by saying that the advocates really made a compelling case over the years. In the current budget, I believe we added 9 positions. And one of the things that we heard over and over again is just the ability to foster animals and some of the red tape that's related to CMPD. So we moved it over to General Services. There are some efficiencies in terms of staffing. I think we were able to do it with 3 people less in terms of some of the back office space operations. But yeah, and it's more consistent with other animal care and control organizations across the state to be in the facilities place as opposed to CMPD. So the advocates have done a very good case.
Mayor Lyles, one of your major thrusts over the years that you have been mayor have been working toward increasing the amount and maintaining the amount of affordable housing for people. You spearheaded the establishment of those regular referenda that people have said yes to time and time again, $100 million referenda to support that effort. But recently, the city staff recommended to council not to fund the Brooklyn Village project from the Housing Trust Fund because they said it was simply too much money. I think they wanted $13.5 million to break ground on this project. I don't know whether this is a question for you or for Marcus Jones, but Peebles Corporation is the corporation that the city contracted to build Brooklyn Village about a decade ago, and so far nothing has happened. Why is this taking so long?
It's complicated. So, Mr. Jones,
sure.
That complexity.
Sure. So this is payback for last year, me giving a question to the mayor. Mike, the first thing I would say is that all the city did was give ourselves more time before making a determination on that project. And that is, the city would come back to the council in the June timeframe. But there were some concerns about the per unit costs. And so where we are right now is still in the evaluation phase with the project.
So Peebles proposed, initially proposed a mixed use development with a couple of affordable housing units. They came back to the council and said, okay, we're going to build all affordable housing units, as I understand it, at least in this first phase of the project, 250 affordable housing units. And they asked for $13.5 million to get the project started. The housing fund was replenished recently with $100 million. Put that $13.5 million into perspective, because evidently it was the most amount of money any single developer has ever asked for.
Correct, Mike. And so that's, you know, part of the issue. It's $100 million, and we're right out of the chute. There were, I think, close to $80 million of requests. So what the council has done that's different is not only focus on multifamily, but a series of different opportunities from home ownership to, you know, rental assistance. And so it would put pressure on the fund. It just was not as compelling as some of the other projects that were in the queue at the time.
But does it disturb you that the Peebles Corporation out of, I think, Miami, that they have had this contract with the city to build this project for a decade and absolutely nothing has happened, and the equations keep changing, but nothing happens. Nothing comes out of the ground. After 10 years, one would think that you would either cut bait and hire somebody else, or I don't know. Why haven't we changed direction?
So, Mike, you put me in this strange position each year. The contract's not with the city. The contract's with the county.
Okay.
And this is just one element of the Affordable Housing Trust Fund where anybody can come in and have 4% credits and put an application in. They put an application in.
Okay. So I'll let you off the hook because the contract is with the county. You had nothing to do with that. They're just begging for your money. That's all. Let me ask about this, because this was a story that cropped up, I think, this morning, reporting in the Charlotte Observer. Charlotte City Council member Victoria Watlington is alleging corruption within city government. She sent an email out to supporters. She is running for re-election, and perhaps this is a way to gin up votes. I don't know, but she did this amid reports of the settlement that the city reached with the police chief. And she begins her email to her potential donors with the words, "Power corrupts." And she says she's extremely concerned with the level of unethical, immoral, and frankly illegal activities occurring within city government. Do you know what she's talking about, Mayor?
I don't know what she's talking about, but everybody on the council has an opinion. And so we'll probably learn a little bit more. But I think that when we talk about this community and what this government is, the idea that someone thinks that there's corruption in Charlotte's government is wrong and not correct.
But how would we know? We had a discussion earlier in this program about a settlement that you allegedly reached in a closed-door meeting with the police chief over texts that were sent by Tariq Bakari, the former city council member, that the police chief thought were damaging to his reputation and his future employment prospects. And so he sued, and the city allegedly decided to settle. And the numbers that I've heard were between $100,000 and $300,000. And Corrine Mack filed an ethics complaint about Bakari and the chief in January, and the city attorney at the time dismissed it. Were you aware of that at the time? Was the full council aware of it at the time?
You know, Mike, what you've explained is exactly why you should say that this government is doing the right thing, because we follow the law and the processes that we adopt as policymakers. So the idea that we are doing something outside of policy or outside of, you know, our city attorneys, outside of our rules around how do we make sure that everybody understands that closed sessions are closed sessions, then that's why I can say that we are doing the right things, because we do not violate our principles and our policies.
But we have to trust you on that. And I'm just curious, because this came up earlier in our conversation. Is this a state law that protects these personal matters, or is it a city policy? Is it a council policy? What prevents you from telling us or revealing the details of large expenditures of taxpayer money, including that went out to the former city attorney who was let go under still mysterious circumstances?
So what I would like to say is that we have attorneys that work with us, and they give us this guidance, and we all understand what that guidance is. And so, but there is a portion of it that at some point, and you say this, that we do take minutes, and at some point after entire process is done and everybody has made their decision about what's going to happen, we do have those remarks provided by the city clerk, but not during the heat of the moment, and not to injure people that work for us.
But you said that we will never know what the settlement is.
Did I say never? You'll know when the city clerk provides it.
Okay. Let me close with something special. You've been mayor for a long time. The election is in November. Are you going to run again?
I'm running every day, Mark. Every day. So thank you for asking.
You're running, but does that mean you are running for re-election every day?
You know, as long as this community believes that I have something to contribute, then I will always try to do my very best to serve.
Yeah, but that doesn't really answer a very easy question. It's kind of a yes or no question.
Is it for you or for me?
Well, so you haven't decided is what I'm hearing you say. You're going to assess your support and then you will decide. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
I think that I will assess my willingness to have people support me. Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Okay. Charlotte Mayor Vial Isles. Very skillfully skirting the question, along with...
I'm trying to be like you, Mike.
I'm not supposed to say anything. Marcus Jones, the city manager, thank you both for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. We have additional production help from Jesse Steinmetz. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.